Hello and welcome to the Film Ireland podcast. I'm Gemma Cray, and later in the episode we'll hear from director Michael Showalter about his film The Idea of You. But first, I'm chatting with LA-based director Andrew Bard about his tense thriller Sunrise. Thank you so much for chatting with us. Oh my God, it's lovely to have you back. And you're in sunny Santa Monica at the moment. Oh my God, I'm so jealous. So tell us, this is the kind of a sneaky Irish film in the sense where it was filmed on location in Northern Ireland, but it does not look like that at all. Talk to me about how it came to be.
That worked out really good because originally it was set in Northern Ireland. It's written, you know, it was originated from there. I think Ronan Blaney, the writer, did the first draft about 18 years ago, and it went through various hands. Niall, one of my writer collaborators, reminded me that it was announced, I think 2017, Gary Shore was going to do it as Red River. And it was the brainchild, not the brainchild, sorry. It was Ronan Blaney wrote the script. And then Mark Coughlin, who was a very well-regarded producer in Northern Ireland, it was his kind of baby. And then Mark was instrumental in me getting zoned on in Northern Ireland with Mark Brennan, my producing partner there. Martin and I have done all three movies together. They just started day one of the movie called Worldbreaker with Mila Jovovich and Luke Evans. And my manager, Jib, is there right now in Belfast doing it as well. He's a producer on it as well. So, my guys, Martin and Jib, this is their fifth international movie in Belfast. Is it? Or no, we shot One Way in Georgia in the US. But still, Northern Ireland is a good spot and the crew were amazing. Northern Irish Screen were just super supportive. A lot of that's to do with Ronan and Martin, you know. For whatever reason, you know, I'm from Dublin, and yet I've gotten massive support from Northern Ireland for Zone 414 was my first movie, and this is my third one. And it was great to have Guy came back. Guy Pearce was in this, you know, he was in Zone. And we brought up actors from Dublin, although most of the crew were Northern Irish. I brought a DP in from New York, who's Slovakian, Ivan Abel, amazing guy. And some of the actors were British. Guy Pearce is actually officially English. He was born in England, like he's not Australian. So, and Alex is British, English, you know, whatever. And then we had Alwyn Fuery was in this as well. It was great. I did Zone with Alwyn. John Connors is in it, who I love. A real character. Lawler Roddy, amazing character actor in Northern Ireland. He's like the Harry Dean Stanton of Northern Ireland. He's amazing. Very only small roles, unfortunately, because they're great actors, super actors. And we brought one guy over from the U.S., Kurt Yeager, who played quite a significant role. It's kind of like the third lead. But all the crew, all the post, it was all posted in Yellow Moon, although I did some virtual post in L.A. I threw Yellow Moon to a post house in L.A., and it worked out very good. So the colorist, all the sound design, composer, one of the editors, although my editor from One Way came in and helped finish it, John Walters, great, super editor, love John. And I did a little bit down in Dublin with John. He has his own edit suite there now. And it was really, yeah, it was great. Northern Ireland was amazing. The locations were great. So what I tried to do is we ended up, not we, but the script was moved to the US to help finance it easier. So I just really saw that you could utilize Northern Ireland as like a kind of area of the Pacific Northwest. We found this incredible forest called Gorton Glen, Kind of centered it all around this forest, and it had all these California trees in it, so it was very, it just really worked. By and large, I think we conned most people, it got released in the US on the 19th of January, and very few people questioned the setting. You know, I think we fooled a lot of people, so it worked out very good.
You've your high schools, you've your sort of rural backdrop, tiny like dive bar, you've all those kind of, and the you know, like the farmhouse, the American farmhouse, like it doesn't have there's not an Irish vibe around it at all, which is fabulous. And again, the production value was so amazing. You talked to me actually about developing this first with Ronan before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the story and how it plays out and the casting elements. I'd love to chat with you about how, you know, like, so this was something that you came on board with. It had been floating around for a while, yourself and Ronan. How do you work together as a pair? Was this something that you guys did drafts back and forth with bringing it to America? I think it was the last time we spoke, this was underway, but it hadn't been locked down.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's as with most movies. Well, the way these are financed is with cast. So casting is always tricky, you know, trying to get the right cast, right for the movie, right for the finance, everything. So I was probably casting when we were talking about One Way. So with Ronan, Ronan had been brought in on another project that we're going to do with Pierce Brosnan. And we brought in Ronan to do a polish on that. So I worked with Ronan on that. I won't name the project. Maybe it will come to pass sometime because it's kind of stalled, but Pierce still wants to do it. We'll see. We worked on that and trying to get the script right. We couldn't quite get it there. That was the issue with it. But So when that stalled, it was an Australian thing came up and I was going to do that. And then I wasn't happy with it. And then Martin said, what about Sunrise? And I'd already known Ronan and Sunrise was Mark Clutham's kind of baby. And Mark was so instrumental to us, to Martin and myself and getting Zone done. And, you know, it had already been around. So it Fassbender was going to direct it at one stage, I think, and star in it. Jamie Dornan, I believe, wanted to play the lead. Terry George was going to direct it. And I think Johnny Depp was somewhat interested in it because he knew Terry George. Who else? Gary Shore was going to direct it. I think each time a filmmaker came on, certain changes got made, you know? So it's hard to know. I did ask Ronan the origin. But when I read it, to me, it was kind of representative, metaphorical about Northern Ireland and the struggles and stuff, with all the racism and the vampirism in the script was like, it's like represented like, to me, it was like a town run on fear, which it is, you know, but it's very similar to Northern Ireland, like the fear. And I kept that element a lot, but you would find that in small towns in the US as well. Very puritanical, small-minded, fearful. And then he kind of crafted this very much a family kind of a drama, but also a family drama set in a backdrop, which to me really felt like the origin of it was growing up in Northern Ireland. Then it was moved to a small American town, and it had this vampire mythical element to it, which I haven't said this before in press, but I could compare the vampiric element of Sunrise to the pagan element. Maybe that's it, like in Ireland. You know, Ireland has such a pagan history, but it's kind of overrun then by Christianity.
As does the state. I mean, we do have Same that same
Yeah.
thing, which I thought was very interesting, where it would talk about, you know, this very kind of ritualistic element of the land. And then you're like, well, really, like
Yep.
the, you know, the people up in the pulpit, and I don't want to give too much away, but you know, like your Guy Pearce character up in the pulpit preaching to his followers about blood. And then it was like, well, ultimately, like, aren't they an interloper in that space as well? So it does, like, all those things are like really do transfer quite well.
They do. They do. I mean, Ireland could almost be, because I've now spent so much time between the US, Ireland, UK over the last few years, that Ireland really could be another state, another American state. I really mean that, because there's so much. It could be like a Midwestern American state, because there's such a connection between Ireland and the United States. There's such a It's just huge. And I found Northern Ireland worked so well w when it was merged, or when it was transposed to the US, in that kind of, as you said, that Midwestern sort of, or Pacific Northwestern. And not just that, but the characters, and then being able to cast from Dublin, London, and Belfast. It was a good mix. The trickiest thing was the teenagers, because American high school and American school system is completely different to the Ireland or UK system. So that was tricky for the kids to play that, but they did quite well. I had my issues with certain parts of it, but it didn't get criticized, which I was pleasantly surprised by. So they pulled it off. Anyway, yeah, the pagan thing, I brought that into the vamp. Because I wasn't really interested in making a vampire movie. I was interested in the idea of the vampire being like the kind of eternal sort of. I mean, that's it. More to me, what drew me to Fallon, the lead character, is like a guy who's or undergone this massive trauma, right? And has fallen into this kind of addiction, you know? He's at a moment of weakness, he's become addicted to this, which is like vampires addicted to blood. But so he's developed this kind of addiction, and he's in this purgatory, this eternal purgatory, until he comes to terms with the loss of his family. And he's got to like go through this catharsis, which he does when he meets the Asian family, you know, who he ends up helping. It's through, I think, helping them, and he refines his humanity again. And then Reynolds is your classic antichrist, basically. He's the anti-figure, anti-hero, also consumed with fear and retribution. And he also, so it's almost like a two-hander between Reynolds and Fallon. Guy Pearce plays Reynolds. Alex Pettifer plays Fallon. Had a great time with both of them on this. I hadn't worked with Alex before. We'll do more. We'll hopefully I'll work again with Guy. We've such a good relationship, but Alex and I really hit it off, and we really rolled on this well. But then we brought in a wonderful actress who's based in London called Crystal Yu to play Yan.
And actually, to talk about the casting specifically, how do you attract a cast of that caliber?
It's, I tell you, with the first movie, it was just, I did, at one stage, I had Freda Pinto from Slumdog Millionaire was going to play the lead in Zone 414. And then we had Walton Goggins, and then he wasn't going to do it. And then it collapsed. And I went through various, kind of like Sunrise, but I was on Zone the whole time. Zone didn't have history except me. And it just went through various formations. And when it got to, with Martin, when I paired with Martin Brennan, it was like essentially what happened was Mark Fuffum had done Raised by Wolves with Travis Fimmel, and Travis Fimmel had come up for with actually a talent manager and also executive producer, Sherry. And Sherry came up with the idea for Vikings, brought it to Michael Hurst, who then they brought it to Morgan O'Sullivan, and bang, Vikings happened. And obviously Travis was the king and it was a big success and all of that. So Sherry had suggested Travis to play the lead in zone, and that didn't quite pan out. Know what happened there? And then I ended up with Martin, and Mark Cuffin was helping us, and we brought up Travis because Mark Cuffin had done Raised by Wolves with Travis. So Mark called Travis and said, look, I'm sending you something, it's good. And then we made an offer. But that's how you need those relationships. The same with Guy Pearce. You know, Mark had done Prometheus with Guy. So Guy would check. It's like when we were casting Sunrise, Alex immediately, when we made him an offer, had worked with Guy, which I already knew. So the first thing he does is text Guy, say, are you doing this movie? You know, so a lot of this casting comes from those relationships. That's why I credit. I mean, I did even Frida Pinto. What happened with Frida Pinto is she's managed by a great guy here called Larry Taub, principal. And Larry manages Barry Ward, super Irish actor. At one stage, I wanted Barry to play the lead in Zone, and we couldn't make it work. But Barry was going to do a football movie called Never Walk Alone that didn't come off in the end, but the original producer of Zone was producing it with me, and we just couldn't get it to work. But we got to meet Barry's manager, Larry Taub, and then when we went to cast Zone, I wanted Barry to be the male lead, and Larry suggested Frida Pinto. So Larry promoted, you know, was a supporter of the script with Frida. And then Frida was with legendary Irish, a CIA agent who's Irish, called Hilda Quealy. So just again, it's all about these relationships. And then I knew Barry because Christian O'Reilly, the writer of Never Walk Alone, knew Barry, and I didn't. And I still have yet to work with Barry. We still have to make the football movie. I did talk briefly over the summer with Alan Maloney about doing it. So we'll see. These things can come back. You know,
so what you're saying is have tendrils everywhere. Is that like, yeah, there is just like an infinite network, and when things don't pan out, you just have to keep kind of plowing forward with the next thing, and then eventually
building, you know, building. And as I said, so exactly. But and the big reasons I wanted to do Sunrise was just like because of Mark and Martin, and also some the writing. You know, Ronan had written these incredible characters. Reynolds was one of probably the best character I've ever read. And actors tend to gravitate towards character first and foremost, you know, and they gravitate towards who else are they working with. And so I've been super lucky with the actors, really. And you just build on that stuff. As I said, then maybe it'll come to pass. I'll get to do the football movie, maybe with Barry, but I got to work. It's funny, Lola Roddy and Barry are good mates. And when we were shooting Sunrise, I think Lola was talking to Barry on set, and Barry reached out to me. He's brilliant, Barry Ward, you know? I got to work with him.
Oh, no, he is. He is so talented. And
he's brilliant. And so in one incarnation of Zone, the first movie, it was Barry. And then I had Antonia Campbell-Hughes playing the female lead. And we had Harvey Keitel, who was going to do the professor, you know, the Marlon Veet. And then Jason Patrick, who was going to do it. You go through all these things, you know, and it was, anyway, but again, as you ask about the casting, so much of it is through relationships. And then I get on, I do well with the actors. I like them, they like me. And, you know, I really put a lot of effort into getting the right actor, the right cast, and the right people. And, you know, I give them freedom and stuff, you know. Alex and I really shaped Fallon, you know, on set, you know, on the shoot. It was a really good process, yeah.
It's grand. It's good to see that the story and the scripts and everything keeps evolving as you're working through it, because your work has always been so heightened and stylish. There was a lot of your corn video in the visuals of this, the way the textures and the coloring, and I'm just wondering, like, how much of that plays into it, like your background in music video, those kind of visual styles, are they all things that you're kind of working on and developing those visual styles to use in things, or is it just a happy accident as you go through things, or something that you find on each
just
project?
Like if you're an actor, like if you're a director, a filmmaker, like more like when you're making movies, you're like a filmmaker, because, well, it's not true. You can be hired to be it. I just haven't been hired, you know. I'm not like, not, I'd love to be hired, but it's like these movies, I've all of them. And I'm just about, I just had a meeting about this fourth one. It's a survival movie called Cape Point. We had a great, anyway, I'll mention that in a minute. But I've just ended up backbreaking. Each one's like a burst. But when you get there, I've been given tremendous autonomy and support, genuine. Like, I kind of, the cuts are mine. All the creative decisions, like, that really, it's, I've been, had tremendous creative control over them. A lot of that's due to my, you know, Martin Brennan and Jib Palemas, my manager. They've been the producers on the first three. I'll mention Nathan in the next, when I talk about this next movie. But I've just had, look, it's filmmaking, like anything, is a massive collaboration. I'm a very good collaborator. I just came from this meeting. Everyone's collaborating, finance guys, producers, directors, whatever. It's great to have everyone contributing. It's such a great thing about filmmaking. You get to collaborate, you know. Everyone, you know, the guy who's making the coffee could have the best creative script idea in the world to save a half the day that you need to save to make the day. You know, this is the great thing about, and if you're open to it, I used to be an art director, so I worked with a lot of crappy directors who like to keep, protect, you know, like to be in, try to be in control and not be open to, not be open to good ideas. Whereas I think you need to be a generator, a driver, an inspirer. As if you need to have your point of view. You're the one telling the story, but you need to know when somebody says something that enhances and evolves the story and whatever. And regarding all the shooting I've done before, both as an art director and as a director and with commercials, videos, it's all just flying miles, you know, collaborations and. But when it comes to film movies, you know, feature films, that structure and that narrative, that's its own thing. It's something you've got to learn. And I'm not a writer, although I've become more and more involved in the initial writing or polishing, and then in the editorial, which is huge at the end. But again, it's always such a collaboration. I mean, I think what I do is I hook in on something personal, deeply personal, that I want to tell and explore. And then I just, I just assemble around that and I keep the ship steered in that zone. But it's amazing. We had this meeting where we're doing this movie in South Africa, and it's a British producer, James Harris, US producer Nathan Klinger, who's done all the other movies with me. I have my commercial producer Oscar Thomas is on this because he hasn't done a movie before, but we've done a lot of commercials together before. And we've the South African guys down, they just did a couple of movies down there. We're all sitting around just trying to figure out a couple of things, and then we had finance guy Ford. These are young whiz kids and it's amazing. Ford recommended I work with Niall, who did the rewrite of this movie we're about to do called Cape Point. And everyone sitting around the table coming up with just tweaking certain things that we need to do from both a creative and a pragmatic point of view. And it was a really collaborative, it's just wonderful. There's nothing better, like that relationship I had with Alex Pettifer on Sunrise. Just where you just have the freedom to make it better, because it's all about making it better, and it is a massive craft.
Those are elements of trust as well, in terms of
Huge.
Like of in terms of, you know, like you're a performer, you've to trust
Yeah.
the director's vision, you've to trust that you can be vulnerable and creative in front of them. It's the same with, you know, like you want to dig into a thing. If you're not being heard or being micromanaged, like you're not going to be able to do your best work either. So part of it is that exactly what you were saying about the
Yeah.
collaboration. And just talk to me about you mentioned your finance guy on your new film. So you have Northern Ireland Screen, a New Legend debt fund, and
A
then
New Legend were an Israeli fund that lent on the movie. Yeah. And I think Nathan brought them in. Yeah. And Nathan, so who's been on all my movies, and he was the one who brought this survival movie to me. And then one of Nathan's partners is for his name is Ford Corbett. Ford recommended I use Niall because I want to do a quick polish on it. And then Niall had written a cop movie, New York cop movie, that I'm going to do. So it's a small little world of it's cool. You know, today was just a mixture of a lot of people I've worked with over the years. I'm excited. It was a good meeting, you know, because making these movies is incredibly difficult a lot of the time. So,
And tell me, when did Lionsgate come on board?
yeah, here's an interesting story. So basically what happened was after Sunrise, I was meant to do Niall's New York cop movie. I turned it down and then it came back through other producers because I was doing Sunrise. So I thought that was a real, you know, sign. So I said I'd do it after I did Sunrise. So a couple of the executive producers on that, turns out because Lionsgate were interested in doing the cop movie. So we had a sales company called Solution Group financing and selling Sunrise. So they had started negotiations with Lionsgate for the US rights to Sunrise. And things had slowed down, and it turns out that one of the executive producers, the name of the movie at the moment, the cop movie, is called Cop Bar, although I think the title might change. I'm not thrilled with it. Was like best friends with a decision maker in Lionsgate, so they were able to call them and close that deal. Because we were, although I don't know, you just what happens is when you've got your package, it goes to market and it gets floated, and you know, domestics, whether it's, you know, there's Lionsgate, there's RLJ, there's Saban, there's Paramount actually do a whole buy. So do Lionsgate do the same thing. It's there's a whole bunch of domestics that are interested, where you can sell the whole movie, you can sell the US rights or whatever, you know, because it's a movie that's not generated within the studio, it's acquired by the studio as a pre-buy. So that's how it came about. So they were obviously interested in it, but then negotiations ended up kind of helped to be closed because of a former producer of the cop movie. You see how things kind of just overlap and stuff?
And just keep coming back.
Yeah, and
And do you find it was an easier sell or a different market? The fact that this is such a heavy sort of genre, and it's not, you know, like one way it was very much so an action thriller, and this is a little bit more into the horror.
One Way was super hard to finance because it was super contained. So even though we had Kevin Bacon, who is, you know, a movie, you know, he's brilliant and an iconic movie star, it was still hard to finance it because it was so contained. Super easy to cast it, super hard to finance it. Sunrise, I don't know. Sunrise was very hard to cast because a lot of actors don't like playing vampires and the racial element and whatever. And then when it came to the market itself as well, it's you got a Western, which is a no-go with financing. The people are like, Westerns don't make money. It's a horror movie, you know, which is okay, but you know, it's just tricky. It just was the thing with Sunrise, which I think is its biggest strength, is how original it is. It's such a different take on the vampire movie mixed with a Western. We definitely, when it was given to me, Martin Brennan had referenced Near Dark, and I loved The Crow. But then it ended up being its own thing. It was much more, I had to make sense of the red coat, what it meant. And I brought in a lot more of the folk horror element into the movie, which was also influenced by the environment, you know, the forest and stuff. So, sorry, what was your question, though? I went off track a little bit, Gemma. What were you
asking? I had been asking about the money, and then saying, what was, like, was it easier to even sell? Like, I mean, you were saying that if Lionsgate won later as a horror to go, this
what is... you do, I suppose the deal is like, okay, so what it is you got to get a couple of, sometimes, it depends, but most of the time you get a couple of actors, like, you get Guy Pearce, you get Alex Pettifer, you've got this kind of hybrid where it's a horror western or folk horror, whatever you want to call it, and that's what you sell, you know. So as I said, the subject matter is, because it's a hybrid, it's not that commercial. And then, you know, Alex and Guy together are very interesting, but again, it's not like The Rock and, you know, Ryan Gosling. So it's like, you know, so it all equates down. But what it does say, which I've always been fortunate, and kind of, I'm always working with really good actors. Not only are there name actors or even stars, but they're really good bloody actors. You know, that's the name of the game here. You know, because and good actors will be able to take something and make it their own. Because they're seasoned. Alex is super talented. So, that, you know, it wasn't easy, okay? It was not, and we also had to do it really fast, because by the time Guy said he'd do it, we're just coming up to AFM, because there's four major film markets, and that's where movies get sold, financed, etc., independent movies. And also, whatever, studio movies can sell at the, whatever. Anyway, those are the markets, Cannes, Toronto, AFM, the American Film Market, and Berlin. So we were just up behind AFM, because Cape Point just got sold at AFM just in time, but pre-sold. So you go and you pre-sell markets, you know, to finance the movie. It's kind of like real estate. And then you've got tax rebates, and you've got Northern Irish Screen, you got some soft equity, and get maybe some markers you don't sell, and then you gap those, you know, based on their value. It's not dissimilar to real estate finance and independent movies, you know, and in my opinion. And I kind of explain that to people when they're trying to understand it.
And do you feel kind of, being where you are, like, yeah, based in LA, but able to raise funds back in Ireland, like, do you, like, and dip into European funds, do, yeah, you find that puts you, like, in a better position because you can leverage some off the other, or are they very separate markets?
So, yeah, massively, because even more so, I kind of avoided the strikes and everything, you know, with all the strikes now, the Teamsters and IATSE, which is the IATSE is the craft union, all the cameramen, art directors, grips, you name it, they're going on strike. So the whole thing has just been a mess. And what's happened is it's made filmmaking so much more expensive in the United States. So it just, all the strikes are encouraging people to go offshore and shoot abroad, anywhere but the US. So the fact that, like, I'm Irish, I'm American, I'm also, my dad was English, so I'm going to get a UK passport just to have it. But Irish people get the same benefit as UK people when it comes to employment and stuff. It's an Ireland UK deal, whatever, it's something pre-European Union. So it's very beneficial. Like, you know, I'm American, I'm Irish, I'm European, I'm UK. It's very good. And it's very valuable, because then you can make American movies in Europe. Northern Ireland is one of the best deals. I think we have a great infrastructure there. As I said, they're making this movie there right now. It's pretty, I haven't gotten involved in it, but it's post-apocalyptic thing with Mila Jovovich. It's been done in a I'm sure the scale is huge and it's massive in comparison to what you could do for the same price anywhere else. Everyone speaks English. You know, the UK rebate system is very, very fluid. Ireland is a bit more convoluted and complicated because I've ran close through in Mullane and who are brilliant, but the getting the tax rebate and all that's a bit more complicated and the cost is more in Southern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. But all the talent loves to go to Ireland, you know, everybody wants to go to Ireland, you know, which is great.
It's great to see it as well. Those nice international films that kind of like advertise us as a location. Actually, talk to me about The Post and about working with Yellowstone and Windmill. And you said a little bit. Tell me about the process of that. Also, the sound mix is great. Would you be working on that at the same
crazy
time as Your Post?
Greg Darby owns Yellow Moon in Belfast, and Greg is from Dublin. Greg is from Fox Rock. Drove him crazy because I was spoiled at Winmalane. I did the first two movies at Winmalane Winmalane are just the best and they're world class and they're really something as Irish people in the entertainment or audiovisual sector, someone to be proud of because they really are the legacy and the history. Not just with Post, but with music and the whole deal. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And Yellow Moon started Greg. And, you know, it's a small post house in Hollywood, funnily enough, in Northern Ireland. Beautiful part of Northern Ireland called right by Coltra. Anyway, it's like got a bunch of Georgian houses all put together and the whole post team is in there. But I just was used to, it's a smaller setup than Winmalane. And I just was, and also trying to edit Sunrise. Oh my God, there was so much footage.
There's a lot of narratives. I thought that I was like, you've a lot of arcs in there that's very complicated.
So Helen Sheridan was the primary editor and she had her work cut out for her, I tell you that. I mean, we spent 5 months editing Sunrise. And even with the DGA, a director gets 16 weeks. So that's, okay, that's 4 months. I spent longer doing my director. Actually, I think in the end, we did more. We did close to 6 months before we locked the picture on Sunrise.
And it's nice. It's a nice neat hour and a half. Did anything go? Or was it like finding the pacing and finding the balance?
Yeah, it just, look, there was a lot of threads in there. There was a couple of narrative threads I would have removed if I could have, but I couldn't. The script could have done with more of a polish before we shot, but it was just the chain of events that. But we had to figure a lot of stuff out in the edit, and Helen and I spent a long, long time in the edit, working through. And I shoot super fast, and there was a lot of footage, and we always had two cameras, maybe three, I think, at times. I think there was a third, second unit. And but funnily enough, once again, I didn't even have to go back and do any pickups, you know? I mean, it was like I think the only movie I need to do some sort of pickups on was the first one. So very minor ones, and it was the middle of COVID. So with Zone, we just realized that the girl that disappeared in the Zone, which is a crucial part of the story, there wasn't enough of her in the movie. So I had to figure out a way to shoot more of her and put her in the movie so the audience could identify with her. With Sunrise, it was like, I felt we had all the elements. The structure was not there when we went to shoot. And I thought Helen and I, we had a good chat with brilliant DP. First feature film, but he's brilliant. Ivan Abel. Really great Slovakian. I'd done music videos with him in New York.
Yeah,
he's brilliant. Anyway, Ivan and Helen and I sat and we talked it through. And I think Helen was a bit nervous to begin with. I don't think she quite wanted to do the movie because she felt that I had issues. But then she talked to myself and Ivan. And And that was it. And then we went in and we started cutting. And I mean, the assembly was a horror show. I was like, oh my God, which often it is, but this was particularly bad. And it just, there was so much, you know, the movie, every movie comes alive in the edit, you know, it really does. If you do not properly treat a movie in post-production, you lose it completely. And that's why I value the post-production houses and process so much. And in the end, I did give them a hard time. I was full on, and I'm pretty vocal and intense. And I think some of the other editors were like, what the fuck is that guy doing? You know, because it was frustrating, you know, because I'm vocal, not to Helen, but to this process itself and the material. And you know, look, it was a pretty, I think Yellow Moon really delivered in the end, but I really pushed them. I did, and they delivered. So I hope all is forgiven. I don't know, because I was really hard on them, but they really did deliver. The sound, the music, the color, the visual effects, everyone delivered in the end. It was just such a beast to write the edit.
The score was just phenomenal as well. Like, I really...
Name is Andrew Simon McAllister, a classically trained from Northern Ireland. He had buttons to do the score. He even brought, he did some original stuff. You know, we brought in a freelance visual effects guy. There wasn't a lot of visual effects, but stuff had to be done. And he did, you know, at the climax at the end with the big burning tree, he did, you know, and then the grade, the color session, you know, the coloring of the film had to be done virtually with Ivan in New York. And I was in LA, and it actually worked out very good, because, you know, when you get a couple of movies deep, you realize, look, you don't have to be there all the time and with the technology. So this next movie, all the posts, is going to be the UK. But if I'm in LA, I can do some of it from here, or you can be anywhere. You know, it can be done. I did a lot of ADR in LA. You know, so the actors, say Guy was in Amsterdam, I'm in LA. Then they're in the studio in Yellow Moon in Belfast, and you can make it work, you know. And it worked out. The sound editor was in London. Really good sound editor, actually, they brought in. He was really good. So it worked out. So Yellow Moon really delivered. I was a pain in the ass, but that's just the way I am. I won't stop till I get the best out of the best. It's just the way I am. And you know what? I think in the end, everyone should, like, it really is a Northern Irish kind of produced film with certain American elements and a little bit of British, you know, whatever you call it, English and and Dublin, obviously, some Irish actors and Dublin actors. But it's a real testament to what can be done in Northern Ireland. I mean, visually and technically, I think it's stunning. Stunning.
It's absolutely beautiful. And it really sells that space as America. Yeah. You know, like, you're not questioning it.
All Northern Irish crew, we had very limited resources. We had to do an American movie in Northern Ireland with one, I think, American actor in the end. And we pulled it off, and we shot it in a ridiculously short period of time. And I'm really hardcore, because that crew were just mega. The costume designer was their first full, I think, you know, their first full, whatever you call it, head of department. So is the makeup. Brilliant production designer, Ashley Jeffers, who Ashley kept being called about kneecap. And we're like, what's this kneecap thing? Kneecap. And then we heard, like, oh yeah, it's some like Irish rappers, Republican rappers. It's like, okay, right, that sounds like interesting. It's like the Rubber Bandits are making a movie or something. And then we heard, oh, Fassbender's going to be in. I'm like, give me a break. And it turned out he also produced it. Now it just won the Audience Award at Sundance. So there you go. Maybe Ashley's annoyed he didn't do Kneecap. I don't know. He did a great... Ashley does a lot of period movies, and he's a great design... I used to be a production designer, so I really appreciate... He's the best one I've worked with. He's really, really, really good. And I work with some great guy, Philip Murphy, in Dublin on Zone. He's from Dublin. And I worked with an American guy on One Way who's great. and I've, you know, been one for, I was a designer for like at least a decade. So as she did it, but again, no resources, trying to do America, you know, Pacific Northwest and Northern Ireland. And, but again, because I have that mind, I picked the old Michelin tire factory because it was very American. That was, there was no factory in the script initially. I picked Gorton Glen. There was no, I don't think there was a forest. We just created that. So you have to be smart. And then they just did a phenomenal job. And as I said, from a production point of view, that's all 99% Northern Irish talent. And we did it on a very, very economical restraints.
And if you could talk to me about the lessons that you've learned from each of your films, if you were like, okay, from that first film, I took this on to the
always next. Story, story, narrative, narrative, story, story, narrative, narrative. Because that fundamentally is what I do. And that's what I get judged by, is the narrative. Because I had certain issues with certain performance elements in Sunrise, and yet nobody criticized. The cast once again got praised, you know. So I really have done well with my cast on each movie, and everyone delivers. And I think at this stage, actors know that if you're with Andrew, you're in pretty good hands. So I love actors. So it's always, any of the criticisms are going to be narrative, our story, originality. And you're always trying to be. So now at Sunrise, we were deeply original, but there were some, I think it had too many narrative threads, and we try to curtail those as much as possible. What do you learn? And that's what it's about. It's about driving that narrative. And making it, like, for example, the meeting I just had, which was so cool, because it was like, you basically a finance guy, a producer who comes from finance, you have physical producer, very seasoned director, and a guy who's coming into movies from advertising, all sitting around, and we kind of reshaped the opening of this next movie to facilitate a practical thing, but also it became such, it just is so cool. So we're going to set, the movie's probably going to start in London at a bank heist rather than all be in Cape Town. And because it's a UK South African co-pro, and we want to use a particular actor who's got to stay in London. And we just, from a practical point of view, we're like, okay, well, let's just open it in London, which is great, and make it international. And then, you know, then we have like someone like Niall who can jump in and like polish that super quick, rather than sometimes the original writers, no offense, can be very protective. And it's like, sometimes you just got to get in there and get it done, you know?
Well, especially if it's not cohesive, if you're going to be changing elements, it's actually going to be harder to gel it.
Well, so it's practical as well. Like, so this is sold as an elevated survival movie. It has sharks to it, but not to tag it like a shark movie. I don't want to give too much away, but you know, it's very much a character piece about a dysfunctional family that ends up entangled with this criminal couple, and they've got to like the family have to sort their shit out to survive. And they find them, these five characters find themselves in a really intense environmental situation. So you know, it's story at the beginning, and then as you cast the actors, you pick a certain tint on the movie, a tone to the movie. You know, like if you put Nick Cage in a role, is going to shape the movie to a certain degree. You take him out and you put Jared Butler in that role, it's they're different movies. These actors, really great actors, they have a certain DNA, and they, you know, it's like ingredients when you're cooking. Do you know what I mean? So I'm going to make this dish with lamb. No, you know what? I'm going to make it with beef. You know what I mean? So it's still a stew, you know?
But it's a very different tonal stew. So that's very
interesting. It is.
would that impact the team? So if you get someone of that caliber in and you're like, does that mean you actually have to go rework the script and their characters so that...
No, because it's not like your gravity, these names come through because of the material, you know, yeah. So they come up because of the material. So sometimes, you know, it's not like we've just changed the character here. We've just decided to change the location of the opening, which makes it, because I wanted this London crime thing. It's great, actually. It's so, because it just adds a certain, it gives it a certain edge to it. And it also helps then, it's a UK South African co-pro. So now the fact that part of the movie is going to be shot in London is great. You know, it's good for the rebate because you're getting a rebate out of South Africa, a rebate out of the UK. But, you know, it all helps. It's same in, with these movies I've done. You need to have an Irish element if you're getting an Irish rebate or Northern Irish rebate. So you need a UK element. So even if they're American, that's why in the movie, when Alwyn Fuere's character says to Alex Pettifer's character, "You English," that was put in to qualify the movie for a rebate in the UK. That's how these things come about. You know, you got to like finagle things a little bit, you know? So you got to be able to do that and not be too precious, but always try and make the best piece possible and entertain practical realities. So.
And what are you looking forward to on the new one? What's your
story?
Thing?
Just telling a great story and also seeing South Africa, which is both the British and American producers, Nathan and James, have just done movies there. Nathan did one with Josh Duhamel and it went really good. You can tell when something goes well. You don't need somebody to tell you. You can sense it. And then James did a movie for Lionsgate there with a really good Hungarian director called Nimrod Antal, who made a great movie. His first one was called Control. But he's done a whole bunch of studio movies. So they both had great experiences there. They just finished in January. So we're doing this one in August. I'll be going hopefully end in May and to prep it. And then it's always a chance to tell about just to get tighter with the storytelling, you know? And, you know, that's what it's always about. You know, that's what you're trying to do. Emotionally engage the audience in a great story, you know, with great characters. I mean, that's what it is, you know?
Yeah, but we look forward to watching your next one. You have to come back and chat to us when that one is out. But thank you so much for chatting.
No, it's been really good. Great to chat with you, Gemma.
And now here's director Michael Showalter talking about his rom-com, The Idea of You, which is available to stream on Amazon Prime now.
I love romantic comedy and romantic movies. I loved the movie Notting Hill. It was one of my favorite movies. And so I'm always looking for a romantic story, an equation that I haven't seen before, but that is exciting. And this felt like that. This felt like familiar in some ways, obviously like kind of a Notting Hill, but reversing the role, the genders a little bit. And the pop star character is obviously, you know, in the culture right now, we're very intrigued with our pop stars, our Harry Styles and our Taylor Swifts and our Billie Eilishes and on and on. And it just felt like this woman, Solène, who is, you know, recently divorced, and just the connection of that just felt like a very buzzy idea for a romantic equation.
I mean, it absolutely translates. And speaking of pop stars, having seen it, it's hard to believe that August Moon aren't actually a real boy band. Could you tell me a little bit about the process and preparation that went into casting, creating and developing the band that we see in the film?
Well, we wanted the band to be cool. We didn't want this to be where we're making fun of boy bands and that they're corny or anything like that. We really wanted them to be awesome and great. So incredible, you know, in terms of casting these great, cool looking guys that are all amazing dancers and singers. And in their costumes, our costume designer, Jackie DiMaterio, gave them these really cool, contemporary, modern costumes. we have a songwriter named Savan Kotecha who's a pop star, a pop music writer that's written songs for all the pop stars out there. Anyone you can think of, he's written songs for. Create this world for them. And we had a choreographer named Danny Vitale who worked with the guys all day, every day, so that they look comfortable with the microphones and the choreography, the way they are playful, the way they can go in and out of the choreography and interact with each other and interact with the audience, so that by the time it came to shooting our Coachella sequence, they really feel like a real band.
I mean, yeah, I've been listening to, is it Dance Before We Walk quite a lot?
Dance Before We Walk. The acoustic version is out. If you want to, that one's pretty good too.
Ooh, I'll have to have a listen.
Yeah, check it out.
And I wanted to ask you a bit about Anne and Nick, because they have such incredible chemistry on screen. Like, what was it like working with them both? How did you go about casting them? And was it all natural, or did you have to sort of steer it at all? Were they just that sort of?
Well, I'd like to take some credit for it. I mean, I think the characters of Hayes and Solène have a very romantic experience with each other. And so I think from an acting standpoint, you're going on that ride with them. And so as those characters, I think they are feeling the emotions that these two characters are feeling. And they offer each other something. You know, one of my favorite moments in the movie is where he says to her, he tells her the story about going to his favorite, you know, rock star's house, thinking that they're gonna work together on a song. And he says, and I was there to take photos with his 10-year-old daughter. It was her birthday party. And he says, it's my biggest fear is that I'm a joke. And Solène, Anne's character, looks at him and she says, you're not a joke. And I feel like as an actor, you have to have feelings for that other person because you're feeling your own character. So that might have been script and direction, but then also these are really talented actors. They had great chemistry right off the bat from the first time Nick and Anne met, and we had an audition, and Nick came in and they worked together, and he was charming and they had a great rapport right off the bat.
Thank you for listening. If you want to catch more podcasts, make sure to like and give us a follow, and you can subscribe to the Film Ireland newsletter now on filmireland.ie.